Getting this week to the heart of the matter, the aspect of our sugya which is most relevant to most of us on a daily basis, the type of thing that we are potentially violating every week when we do this, when we copy out sources for the chaburas, for the limud. That's the question of fair use, personal use, non-commercial use. The poskim are fairly chaotic on this, as they are in much of the sugya. Particularly in this area, the posts can come down all over the map. Particularly, much of what they say seems to be kind of flying by the seat of the pants, kind of intuitively, what they think is fair or not, often without a really rigorous grounding in the halakhic principles that we've seen. I want to discuss tonight the kind of introduction to what some of the svaras are. I just want to begin by discussing the secular law background on this a little bit. I'm not a lawyer, I'm not an expert on this, just what I've read, just my basic understanding of it. It's actually striking, I don't know if it's significant or not, but it's actually striking that the unsettled, indefinite, and somewhat chaotic state of the halacha on this mirrors, reflects the somewhat unsettled, ill-defined, chaotic state of the law on the same topic. So in law, we're talking about a doctrine called fair use. Fair use began as a common law doctrine. It didn't begin by a codification, by a statute passed by any Congress. It began by a idea that judges had that they had to make certain exceptions to copyright law. And over the years, the judges created a judicial doctrine called fair use. It eventually was codified into statute. And much of what the poskim say on this topic actually parallels strikingly much of what the law says. Obviously, many poskim have views that are either more stringent or more lenient than the law, and the law itself, as we've said, is very unclear in similar ways to the halacha is. Let's just discuss what fair use means in American law, and there are similar laws in other countries, including Eretz Israel. Fair use involves a test where four groups of factors are considered. Now, considered is a very, very vague term. It's not all, it's not none. There's no formula for figuring it out. There are four criteria you consider, and depending on where you stand on each one, that's how the judge makes a decision as to whether a certain use is fair. So the first category has to do with the nature of the copying. Is it transformative? Are you adding something to the original? Is there some shinui? Is there some hosafa? You can parody the original. You can use it for a satire on the state of society. You can do other things to it, to change it, to make it in your own work. Or is it just a ripoff? Are you just copying his thing and maybe tweaking it a little bit, maybe formatting it slightly differently, but it's essentially the same work? Related question is, are you doing this for business, for money, or is it simply a chesed, a non-profit, and for art? What kind of copying it is? The more commercial it is, the more crass it is, the less you're changing, the more usur it is, the more it falls under copyright violation, the more you're adding something, changing something, making something new. And the other issue, the more you're doing it not for business, that's more of a tadheter. So this is point 1A and point B. Then the first thing about transformative is not something the post can discuss very much. The second thing is a big deal, though, whether you're doing it for business or whether you're doing it for personal use. The second category in fair use has to do with the nature of the work, whether it's a novel, whether it's a telephone book. I'm not going to get into the details of what that is. I don't understand that category so well, and I don't know that it's going to figure directly that much into the halacha. The third and fourth are key things in the poskim too. Third is the question of the amount or the substantiality of what you're copying. Are you copying 20 words from a novel, or are you copying an entire chapter from a four-chapter work? It's not a hard and fast rule. There are various myths. People think there's a 300-word limit or this word limit. It's not strictly dependent on words. There was once apparently a newspaper article or some kind of opinion piece that got in trouble for quoting 300 words out of a biography of Gerald Ford because that was considered the heart, the yesod of the whole book, and that was a substantial infringement. But the courts very often consider this: how much are you copying? And how much is, again, this vague kind of ill-defined notion of how fundamental, how much of the original work are you taking versus how much is it just a small sample? The fourth thing is very easy to understand. The fourth thing is, how much do you hurt the commercial prospects of the original publisher? The first thing we mentioned was just what's your intention? Are you doing it for business, or are you doing it for art? This thing is mitzad the nizik. Are you hurting his prospects? Are you going to hurt his ability to sell more copies? Or is it a different market? Are you just doing it in such a way that he's not expected to lose any business because of what you did? That's roughly what the law considers. So the law, for example, in terms of practical examples, the law will typically allow you in a book review to quote a few lines from a book here or there. I don't know if there are any real kind of guidelines for how many lines can you quote, but generally, if you're commenting on the book, that's considered transformative. You're adding something, you're explaining the book, you're judging the book, you're analyzing the book, and also you're only quoting a small part of the book, and it doesn't replace the book. No one's gonna buy the review instead of the book, unless your review is basically just a long summary, which includes all the important parts of the book, in which case you might run into trouble. But a proper review,
I thought there was another svara that it's also almost like for the book, and you're doing it almost for the benefit of the book.
I guess that's I hear a bad that. Review. But it depends, right? Depends whether it's a flattering review.
It really is. You mean it's not even.
You think publishers want it? It's part of the ecosystem. They want attention. You know, it's the suffer to the book is
yeah,
the
mafarshim or the. It's not like you're doing it because you want to read this paragraph. You're doing it so people can see what the book's about. I mean,
it's an interesting argument. It's possible that that's a chelik. It's possible that's a svara. We'll have to see as we go if the post can use a svara like that. And the law, I don't know.
That's what the art school. He read it. The art school has that. Line
I saw that, yes.
For a book review, and presumably because they want people to know what the book's about.
Right.
I mean, that's the whole...
I also looked at the art scroll language, and I did it with Howie. And so the art scroll language, I should point out, is interesting for a few other reasons. They say no part may be copied in any reason, including classroom use, which is going to see is something many of the posts can talk about this week, whether Minastam or Mefurish, whether the author can or means to restrict that. They allow brief passages for reviews, which implies that brief passages not for reviews or for classroom or us, or even if it's brief. Now, the legal framework, I don't know if art scrolls language is primarily intended to be valid under American law, under halacha, or both. People point out that people often think that a publisher can restrict his people's fair use rights, and they can't. Fair use overrides anything the publisher says. Publisher can scream from today till tomorrow, you have no right to use it, I don't consider this fair use. Nobody cares what he considers. The law is the law. The law has its own opinions. So art scroll granting you the right to do a book review is probably superfluous. Under the law, it's probably superfluous because the law would grant you the right to do it anyway. And I don't think they're giving you, if it's only a brief passage, I don't think there's anything there that the law wouldn't give you. They might be telling you that lahalacha, even if you go like the machmirim we're going to see this week, who might forbid book reviews, they're telling you that they're not machmir on that. But yes. Right, so in that case, yes, the article specifically does allow book reviews, and they specifically do not allow classroom study, right. So we'll cover that. So
that's allowed, book reviews are allowed.
Right, so book review is a classic example. It's allowed, just this week, there was a big case on all the tech sites. There's a law professor, Lawrence Lessig, who is well known as a kind of pro-fair use advocate. So he gives lectures, and he puts them on YouTube, and in one of his lectures, he used a few seconds from a song. I'm not sure exactly what his point was, but he used a few sections of, I think, people dancing to a certain song. So the publisher sued him for, I think, didn't sue him. They went to YouTube and they said, take down. There's a current law that says you can, a site like YouTube, if you hold the copyright, you can tell them, take it down, because it's we have copyright. On the other hand, since Lessig is an expert on copyright law and fair use, he countersued them. There's a law that if you make an improper takedown request, you can get countersued, and he countersued them for a clear fair use exception, he said, and they basically rolled over and played dead. They were mowed. They paid him money. They issued an apology. They said, you're right, this is fair use. We're not, again, because then his arguments were, it's a tiny amount of the song. Nobody's buying, but nobody is going to listen to my lecture instead of the song. I'm doing it for an educational purpose. I'm not, simply copying the song. I'm making some kind of intellectual, cultural point. And it met all the different, it's not commercially said. I think it's academic, it's educational. It met all the different conditions, basically, and that's a classic example. And the Kahena of a Kahena, there are many examples of fair use. And some of them are very entertaining. They're from all kinds of interesting corners of culture. So just to give an overview of Lahalacha, we'll see the actual tshuvas, the actual stuff I've been able to find as we go this week, but just to give a general overview of how we would approach these things, we've seen in the previous weeks of this limud, we've seen a number, most of the major theories in Halacha for what the basis for intellectual property is. We've seen Sholem Eshev and company, that an author, an inventor has an intrinsic right, Be'etzem, Svara, a right to his property. some say especially in Torah because of Tarasa Yege, Marasa Kilos Yaakov. Some of them say Dafka not in Torah because Torah is supposed to Nani Bechina, but whatever it is, either other things and or Torah, an author has a basic right. That's really the most chomer. That's really the most chomer when it comes to fair use. If I have a right, I can restrict you however I want. Yeah, I don't have to make exceptions. I mean, it's my thing. It's my thing. Nevertheless, the poskim still have some heterim. You can say maybe I don't really mind. If I don't say beferish as Art Scroll did, you can say maybe midas dom in some cases. You can say yish. These are all sparas that we'll see in the poskim. But the point is, if you start from a notion that I have an intrinsic fundamental right al pi halacha to control my intellectual property, even though it's a davar shein b'mamash, it's still mine. Like we saw, some poskim use the language shol midas, kinyan ruchni. If you go like that, then I can restrict whatever I want. Mitzad sheni, if you go that there's no real right, and it's just a question, as we haven't really focused on this lehedya, but the idea that it's fundamentally a question of asagas gvul, or of the cherims and protections for the first publisher, then you can obviously hear more leniencies, that insofar as what I'm doing is not really going to hurt your, not really going to hurt the publisher, it's not really going to prevent him from recouping his investment, then obviously then there's much more room for all kinds of svaras, all kinds of aterim, because the publisher has no, the publisher, the author, have no fundamental intrinsic right. It's just a question of hasagas gvul, of not hurting their business, or a question of takanas, that the haramim, and things the post can make to give them financial viability. So obviously then we can, then there's much more room for leniency to find, you know, all kinds of exceptions. The third possibility is din malchus adina, that we discussed last week, the idea that halacha recognizes the law as binding. Then obviously, you know, my whole introduction wasn't a total waste of time. It then becomes very important to know what the law actually says, because, and this I think is something, again, it's similar to what we discussed last week. This I think is an attitude that many posts can take for one reason or another, that many posts can will I think give guidelines based on din malchus adina. The same way that we said last week that the reason poskim say din malchus adina applies in the first place here is because it's something that halacha doesn't have such a clear, unequivocal stance on. Halacha is kind of trying to catch up to the modern metzias. So the poskim are more likely to say that if the din malchus is reasonable, we should go with it. So I think hu adin when it comes to these kinds of exceptions and these kind of when yes and when not, I think poskim will often say that if the law allows it, we're not going to tell you dafka to be machmer and follow the more stringent views in halacha to be more machmer if the law allows it. And the idach is, if the law does not allow it, then poskim again, like we discussed last week, will I think be machmer, will accept that if the law forbids something and it's a reasonable law, you should be machmer. A friend of mine in Lakewood was once looking for a job for his wife. So he was, she was an accountant, so he basically was going to, he found a small business directory in the library. It just like a telephone book, but like for businesses. It just arranged businesses by category, by location, and it was, he wanted to copy out 10, 20 pages of businesses that met his criteria, so he can then just go, you know, call them one by one, see if they had openings. As he's about to take this fat book over to the copying machine, he sees that it says in the flyleaf, you know, no part of this book may be reproduced by any means, mechanical, optical, without written permission from the publisher or whatever. So he asked the librarian, you know, what's the deal? Am I allowed to copy this? She looks at him like, what do you think, we have copiers? Yeah, of course you're allowed to copy. Like, but it says no part may be reproduced. My friend was very, very honest, a man of, you know, serious integrity. So he went to ask one of the Mari Hara in Lakewood, like, what's the deal? Am I supposed to restrict? This, I think, was not a Jewish publisher. I mean, no reason to assume it's a Jewish publisher. But he asked, you know, what should I do? She, you know, respecting the demands of the publisher. So he was told, do what the law says. You know, the law has exceptions. You know, follow the law. So we went into the library. We found in the annex, we found like the federal code, all 103 volumes of it. And we sat there for a half hour. You know, obviously it's a little futile if you're not a trained lawyer just to try to read the federal code. It's very entertaining reading, it was, but to try to actually figure out lemaisa whether something is mutter or not is not, you know, you can't really, you probably asking a lawyer is a better idea. In this case, I think, you know, we determined, for whatever our opinion was worth, was that this seemed to probably be fair use. It was a fairly small use of the book. It was, I guess, for the purpose of finding a job, and it wasn't the sort of use that was going to, it was in the library anyway, it wasn't the kind of, it was meant for library usage. This is the point that some of the posts are going to discuss. Some of the posts can grapple with this, that you talk about hurting the publisher's business. Well, so do libraries hurt the publisher's business. And every time I borrow a novel from a library, Jewish or otherwise, I read it in a week, I give it back, I'm not going to buy that book. It's especially, you know, books like novels, which are, you know, ephemeral, they're one shot. Nobody says libraries are asur because of asagas gvul. So this is something the poskim, we're going to see the Rezer Batsri, the Pesach Hoshim struggle with, try to explain what sorts of copying, sharing, This is the big claim of the anti-copyright people today. You know, sharing, you know, it's just sharing. Sharing is not a Sucker's Goal. Sharing is not Oster. Why is copying so different from just, you know, lending you my CD and letting you play it on your tape recorder for chasana, for even for private listening? So this is something again the Post can struggle with. But again, the law has its rules. The Reza Batri we're going to see is kind of going to defer to the law because the Malchus Adina, and the law says what it says. So you have to know what the law says, according to many poskim. But again, many poskim, though, don't go with the law and construct, you know, systems which are very similar, although, again, it's often very hard to understand what they mean, why they say what they say. And as the Pesach Hoshin says, the last word, I think, is going to be the quote I bold in the Pesach Hoshin, Kasha lichtav davar barer, and the poskim do indeed have a very hard time giving fully compelling, rigorous rules for this inyan.